Oh, spineless rats. I've never talked about it. There seemed to be no point, and it's necessary to look up, not down, lift one's burden and go ahead. But I thank dear Bog that I have been permitted to live to see the time come, if indeed it has. Explain more about it. I am to find three others, is it? Three who can be trusted?
Don't hurry. Move slowly. Be sure.
Cedrus can be trusted. She holds her tongue, that one.
Don't think you should pick from family. Need to spread out. Don't rush.
I shan't. We'll talk before I do anything. And Manuel, if you want my opinion...
She stopped. Always want your opinion, Mimi.
Don't mention this to Grandpa. He's forgetful these days and sometimes talkative. Now sleep, dear. And don't dream.
9.
Followed a long time during which would have been possible to forget anything as unlikely as revolution had not the tales taken so much time. Our first purpose was not to be noticed. Long-distance purpose was to make things as much worse as possible. Yes, worse. Never was a time, even at last, when all loonies wanted to throw off authority, wanted it bad enough to revolt. All loonies despised Warden and cheated authority. Didn't mean they were ready to fight and die. If you had mentioned patriotism to a loony, he would have stared, or thought you were talking about his homeland. We transported Frenchmen whose hearts belonged to La Belle Patrie, ex-Germans loyal to Vaterland, Ruskies who still loved Holy Mother Russia. But Luna? Luna was the rock, place of exile, not thing to love. We were as non-political a people as history ever produced. I know. I was as numb to politics as any until circumstances pitched me into it. Wyoming was in it because she hated authority for a personal reason. Prof, because he despised all authority in a detached, intellectual fashion. Mike, because he was a bored and lonely machine, and was for him only game in town. You could not have accused us of patriotism. I came closest because I was third generation with total lack of affection for any place on Terra. Had been there, disliked it, and despised earthworms. Made me more patriotic than most. Average Looney was interested in beer, betting, women, and work, in that order. Women might be second place, but first was unlikely, much as women were cherished. Loonies had learned there never were enough women to go around. Slow learners died, as even most possessive male can't stay alert every minute. As Prof says, a society adapts to fact, or doesn't survive. Loonies adapted to harsh facts, or failed and died. But patriotism was not necessary to survival. Like old Cheney saying that fish aren't aware of water, I was not aware of any of this until I first went to Terra, and even then did not realize what a blank spot was in Looney's under storage location marked patriotism, until I took part in the effort to stir them up. Wyo and her comrades had tried to push patriotism button, and got nowhere. Years of work, a few thousand members, less than 1% of that microscopic number, almost 10%, had been paid spies of Boss Fink. Prof set us straight. Easier to get people to hate than to get them to love. Luckily, Security Chief Alvarez gave us a hand. Those 9 dead Finks were replaced with 90, for authority was gelded into something it did reluctantly, namely, spend money on us. And one folly led to another. Warden's bodyguard had never been large even in earliest days. Prison guards in historical meaning were unnecessary, and that had been one attraction of penal colony system. Cheap. Warden and his deputy had to be protected, and visiting VIPs. But prison itself needed no guards. They even stopped guarding ships after it became clear was not necessary. And in May 2075, bodyguard was down to its cheapest numbers. All of them new chum transportees. But loss of 9 in one night scared somebody. We knew it scared Alvarez. He filed copies of his demands for help in Zebra file, and Mike read them. a lag who had been a police officer on Terra before his conviction, and then a bodyguard all his years in Luna. Alvarez was probably most frightened and loneliest man in the Rock. He demanded more and tougher help, threatened to resign civil service job if he didn't get it. Just a threat, which authority would have known if it had really known Luna. If Alvarez had shown up in any warren as unarmed civilian, he would have stayed breathing only as long as not recognized. He got these additional guards. We never found out who ordered that raid. Mort the Wart had never shown such tendencies, had been King Log throughout tenure. Perhaps Alvarez, having only recently succeeded to boss Fink Sprott, wanted to make face, may have had ambition to be warden. But likeliest theory is that Warden's report on subversive activities caused Authority Earthside to order a cleanup. One thumb-fingered mistake led to another. New bodyguards, instead of picking from new transportees, were elite convict troops, Federated Nations, crack peace dragoons. Were mean and tough, did not want to go to Luna, and soon realized that temporary police duty was one-way trip. Hated Luna and Loonies, and saw us as cause of it all. Once Alvarez got them, he posted a 24-hour watch at every inter-warren tube station, and instituted passports and passport control. Would have been illegal had there been laws in Luna, since 95% of us were theoretically free, either born free or sentence completed. Percentage was higher in cities, as undischarged transportees lived in barrack warrens, a complex, and came into town only 2 days per Luna they had off work. If then, as they had no money. But sometimes saw them wandering around, hoping somebody would buy a drink. But passport system was not illegal, as Warden's regulations were only written law. Was announced in papers. We were given week to get passports. And at 800 one morning, was put in effect. Some Lunas hardly ever traveled. Some traveled on business. Some commuted from outlying warrens, or even from Luna City to Novalin, or other way. Good little boys filled out applications, paid fees, were photographed, got passes. I was good little boy on Proof's advice. Paid for passport, and added it to pass I carried to work in complex. Few good little boys. Loonies did not believe it. Passports? Who ever heard of such a thing? Was a trooper in Tube Station South that morning dressed in bodyguard yellow rather than regimentals, and looked like he hated it and us. I was not going anywhere. I hung back and watched. Novalin capsule was announced. Crowd of 30-odd headed for gate. Gospodin Yellowjacket demanded passport the first to reach it. Loney stopped to argue. Second one pushed past. Guard turned and yelled. Three or four more shoved past. Guard reached for sidearm. Somebody grabbed his elbow. Gun went off. Not a laser, a slug gun. Noisy. Slug hit decking and went, whee, whee, whoo, off somewhere. I faded back. One man hurt, that guard. When first press of passengers had gone down ramp, he was on deck, not moving. Nobody paid attention. They walked around or stepped over, except one woman carrying a baby, who stopped, kicked him carefully in face, then went down ramp. He may have been dead already, didn't wait to see. Understand bodies stayed there till relief arrived. Next day was a half squad in that spot. Capture for Novalin left empty. It settled down. Those who had to travel got passports. Diehards quit traveling. Guard at the tube gate became two men. One looked at passports, while others stood back, with gun drawn. One who checked passports did not try hard, which was well, as most were counterfeit and early ones were crude. But before long, authentic paper was stolen, and counterfeits were as dinkum as official ones. More expensive, but Loonies preferred free enterprise passports. Our organization did not make counterfeits. We merely encouraged it. And knew who had them, and who did not. Mike's records listed officially issued ones. This helped separate sheep from goats in files we were building. Also stored in Mike, but in Bastille location. as we figured a man with counterfeit passport was halfway to joining us. Word was passed down sales in our growing organization never to recruit anybody with a valid passport. If recruiter was not certain, just query upwards, and answer came back. But guards' troubles were not over. Does not help a guard's dignity, nor add to peace of mind to have children stand in front of him, or behind, out of eye, which was worse, and ape every move he makes, or run back and forth screaming obscenities, jeering, making finger motions that are universal. At least guards took them as insults. One guard backhanded a small boy, cost him some teeth. Result? Two guards dead, one loony dead. After that, guards ignored children. We didn't have to work this up. We merely encouraged it. You wouldn't think that a sweet old lady like my senior wife would encourage children to misbehave, but she did. Other things get single men a long way from home upset, and one we did start. These peace dragoons had been sent to the Rock without a comfort detachment. Some of our femmes were extremely beautiful, and some started loitering around stations, dressed in less than usual, which could approach zero, and wearing more than usual amount of perfume, scents with range and striking power. They did not speak to Yellow Jackets nor look at them. They simply crossed their line of sight, undulating as only a loony gal can. A female on Terra can't walk that way. She's tied down by 6 times too much weight. Such, of course, produces a male gallery, from men down to lads not yet pubescent. Happy whistles and cheers for her beauty. Nasty laughs at Yellow Boy. First girls to take this duty were slot machine types, but volunteers sprang up so fast that Prof decided we need not spend money. He was correct. Even Ludmilla, shy as a kitten, wanted to try it, and did not, only because Mom told her not to. But Lenore, 10 years older and prettiest of our family, did try it, and Mom did not scold. She came back pink and excited and pleased with herself, and anxious to tease enemy again. Her own idea. Lenore did not then know that revolution was brewing. During this time I rarely saw Prof, and never in public. We kept touch by phone. At first a bottleneck was that our farm had just one phone for 25 people, many of them youngsters who would tie up a phone for hours unless coerced. Mimi was strict. Our kids were allowed one outgoing call per day, and max of 90 seconds on a call, with rising scale of punishment, tempered by her warmth in granting exceptions. But grants were accompanied by Mum's phone lecture.
When I first came to Luna, there were no private phones. You children don't know how soft.
We were one of last prosperous families to install a phone. It was new in household when I was opted. We were prosperous because we never bought anything farm could not produce. Mum disliked phone because rates at Luna City Co-op Comm Company were passed on in large measure to authority. She never could understand why I could not,
since you know all about such things, Manuel dear,
steal phone service as easily as we liberated power. That a phone instrument was part of a switching system into which it must fit was no interest to her. Steal it, I did, eventually. Problem with illicit phone is how to receive incoming calls. Since phone is not listed, even if you tell persons from whom you want calls, switching system itself does not have you listed. Is no signal that can tell it to connect other party with you. Once Mike joined conspiracy, switching was no problem. I had in workshop most of what I needed, bought some items and liberated others. Drill a tiny hole from workshop to phone cupboard, and another to Wyo's room. Virgin rock a meter thick, but a laser drill collimated to a thin pencil cuts rapidly. I unshipped listed phone, made a wireless coupling to line in its recess, and concealed it. All else needed were binaural receptors and a speaker in Wyo's room, concealed, and same in mine, and a circuit to raise frequency above audio to have silence on Davis' phone line, and its converse to restore audio incoming. Only problem was to do this without being seen, and Mum generaled that. All else was Mike's problem. Used no switching arrangements, From then on, used Mycroft XXX, only when calling from some other phone. Mike listened at all times in workshop and in Wyo's room. If he heard my voice or her say, "Mike," he answered, but not to other voices. Voice patterns were as distinctive to him as fingerprints. He never made mistakes. Minor flourishes. Soundproofing Wyo's door, such as workshop door, already had. Switching to suppress my instrument or hers. Signals to tell me she was alone in her room and door locked. And vice versa. All added up to safe means whereby Wyo and I could talk with Mike, or with each other. Or could set up talk-talk of Mike, Wyo, Prof, and self. Mike would call Prof wherever he was. Prof would talk or call back from a more private phone. Or might be Wyo or myself had to be found. We all were careful to stay checked in with Mike. My bootleg phone, though it had no way to punch a call, could be used to call any number in Luna. Speak to Mike. Ask for a Sherlock to anybody. Not tell him number. Mike had all listings and could look up a number faster than I could. We were beginning to see unlimited possibilities in a phone switching system, alive and on our side. I got from Mike and gave Mom still another null number to call Mike if she needed to reach me. She grew chummy with Mike while continuing to think he was a man. This spread throughout our family. One day as I returned home, Sidra said, "Manny, darling, your friend with the nice voice called, Mike Holmes, wants you to call back." "Thanks, hon. Will." "When are you going to invite him to dinner, man? I think he's nice." I told her Gospodin Holmes had bad breath, was covered with rank hair, and hated women. She used a rude word. Mom, not being in earshot. "You're afraid to let me see him. Afraid I'll opt out for him." I patted her and told her that was why. I told Mike and Prof about it. Mike flirted even more with my womenfolk after that. Prof was thoughtful. I began to learn techniques of conspiracy, and to appreciate Prof's feeling that revolution could be an art. Did not forget, nor ever doubt, Mike's prediction that Luna was only 7 years from disaster. But did not think about it. Thought about fascinating, finicky details. Prof had emphasized that stickiest problems in conspiracy are communications and security, and had pointed out that they conflict. Easier are communications, greater is risk to security. If security is tight, organization can be paralyzed by safety precautions. He had explained that cell system was a compromise. I accepted cell system, since it was necessary to limit losses from spies. Even Wyo admitted that organization without compartmentation could not work after she learned how rotten with spies old underground had been. But I did not like clogged communications of cell system. Like Terran dinosaurs of old, took too long to send message from head to tail or back. So talked with Mike. We discarded many linked channels, I had suggested to Prof. We retained cells but based security and communication on marvelous possibilities of our dinkum thinkum. Communications. We set up a ternary tree of party names. Chairman, Gospodin Adam Selin, Mike. Executive cell, Bork, me. Betty, Wyo. Bill, Prof. Bork's cell, Cassie, Mum. Colin Chang. Betty's cell, Calvin. Greg. Cecilia, Sidrus, Clayton. Bill's cell, Cornwall, Finn Nielsen, Carolyn, Cotter, and so on. At seventh link, George supervises Herbert, Henry, and Hallie. By time you reach that level, you need 2,187 names with H. But turn it over to savvy computer who finds or invents them. Each recruit is given a party name and an emergency phone number. This number, instead of chasing through many links, connects with Adam Selin. Mike. Security. Based on double principle. No human being can be trusted with anything. But Mike could be trusted with everything. Grim first half is beyond dispute. With drugs and other unsavory methods, any man can be broken. Only defense is suicide, which may be impossible. Oh, our Harlow tooth methods, classic and novel, some nearly infallible. Prof saw to it that Wyo and myself were equipped. Never knew what he gave her as a final friend, and since I never had to use mine, is no point in messy details. Nor am I sure I would ever suicide. Am not stuff of martyrs. But Mike could never need to suicide. Could not be drugged. Did not feel pain. He carried everything concerning us in a separate memory bank under a locked signal programmed only to our three voices. And, since flesh is weak, we added a signal under which any of us could lock out other two in emergency. In my opinion, as best computer man in Luna, Mike could not remove this lock once it was set up. Best of all, nobody would ask Master Computer for this file because nobody knew it existed. Did not suspect Mike as Mike existed. How secure can you be, huh? Only risk was that this awakened machine was whimsical. Mike was always showing unforeseen potentials. Conceivable, he could figure out a way to get around Block, if he wanted to. But would never want to. He was loyal to me, first and oldest friend. He liked Prof. I think he loved Wyo. No, sex meant nothing. But Wyo is lovable, and they hit it off from start. I trusted Mike. In this life you have to bet. On that bet, I would give any odds. So, we based security on trusting Mike with everything while each of us knew only what he had to know. Take that tree of names and numbers. I knew only party names of my cellmates, and the three directly under me. Was all I needed. Mike set up party names, assigned phone number to each, kept a roster of real names versus party names. Let's say party member Daniel, whom I would not know, being a D two levels below me, recruits Fritz Schultz. Daniel reports fact, but not name upwards. Adam Selene calls Daniel, assigns for Schultz party name Embrook. Then phones Schultz at number received from Daniel. Give Schultz his name, Embrook, an emergency phone number, this number being different for each recruit. Not even Embrook's cell leader would know Embrook's emergency number. What you do not know, you cannot spill. Not under drugs, nor torture, nor anything. Not even from carelessness. Now, let's suppose I need to reach Comrade Embrook. I don't know who he is. He may live in Hong Kong, or be a shopkeeper nearest my home. Instead of passing message down, hoping it will reach him, I call Mike. Mike connects me with Embrook at once, in a Sherlock, without giving me his number. Or suppose I need to speak to Comrade who is preparing cartoon we are about to distribute in every tap room in Luna. I don't know who he is, but I need to talk to him. Something has come up. I call Mike. Mike knows everything, and again I am quickly connected. And this comrade knows it's okay, as Adam Selene arranged call. Comrade Bork speaking, and he doesn't know me, but initial B tells him that I am VIP indeed. We have to change so-and-so. Tell your cell leader and have him check, but get on with it. Minor flourishes. Some comrades did not have phones. Some could be reached only at certain hours. Some outlying wards did not have phone service. No matter. Mike knew everything, and the rest of us did not know anything that could endanger any but that handful whom each knew face to face. After we decided that Mike should talk voice to voice to any comrade under some circumstances, it was necessary to give him more voices and dress him up, make him three dimensions, create Adam Selene, chairman of the Provisional Committee of Free Luna. Mike's need for more voices lay, in fact, that he had just one voto vocoder, whereas his brain could handle a dozen conversations, or 100, don't know how many, like a chess master playing 50 opponents, only more so. This would cause a bottleneck as organization grew and Adam Selene was phoned oftener, and could be crucial if we lasted long enough to go into action. Besides giving him more voices, I wanted to silence one he had. One of those so-called computer men might walk into Machine's room while we were phoning Mike, bound to cause even his dim wit to wonder if he found Master Machine apparently talking to itself.
Vocoder is a very old device. Human voice is buzzes and hisses, mixed various ways. True even of a coloratura soprano. A vocoder analyzes buzzes and hisses into patterns. One, a computer, or trained eye, can read.
A vocoder is a little box which can buzz and hiss, and has controls to vary these elements to match those patterns.
A human can play a vocoder, producing artificial speech. A properly programmed computer can do it as fast, as easily, as clearly as you can speak. But voices on a phone wire are not sound waves, but electrical signals. Mike did not need audio part of Voda Vocoder to talk by phone. Sound waves were needed only by human at other end. No need for speech sounds inside Mike's room at Authority Complex. So I plan to remove them, and thereby any danger that somebody might notice. First, I worked at home, using number 3 arm most of time. Result was very small box, which sandwiched 20 vocoder circuits minus audio side. Then I called Mike and told him to get ill in way that would annoy a warden. Then I waited. We had done this get ill trick before. I went back to work once I learned that I was clear, which was Thursday, that same week when Alvarez read into Zebra File an account of shambles at Stiliagi Hall. His version listed about 100 people, out of perhaps 300. List included Shorty McCrum, Lyo, Prof, and Finn Nielsen, but not me. Apparently I was missed by his Finks. It told how 9 police officers, each deputized by warden to preserve peace, had been shot down in cold blood. Also named 3 of our dead. An add-on a week later stated that the notorious Agent Provocatus Wyoming Knot of Hong Kong in Luna, whose incendiary speech on Monday, 13th May, had incited the riot that cost the lives of 9 brave officers, had not been apprehended in Luna City, and had not returned to her usual haunts in Hong Kong in Luna, and was now believed to have died in the massacre she herself set off. This add-on admitted what earlier report failed to mention, i.e., bodies were missing. An exact number of dead was not known. This P.S. settled 2 things. Wyo could not go home, nor back to being a blonde. Since I had not been spotted, I resumed my public ways. Took care of customers that week, bookkeeping machines and retrieval files at Carnegie Library, and spent time having Mike read out Zebra File and other special files, doing so in room L of Raffles, as I did not yet have my own phone. During that week, Mike niggled at me like an impatient child, which he was, wanting to know when I was coming over to pick up more jokes. Failing that, he wanted to tell them by phone. I got annoyed, and had to remind myself that from Mike's viewpoint, analyzing jokes was just as important as freeing Luna. And you don't break promises to a child. Besides that, I got itchy wondering whether I could go inside Complex without being nabbed. We knew Prof was not clear, was sleeping in Raffles on that account. Yet they knew he had been at meeting, and knew where he was, daily. But no attempt was made to pick him up. When we learned that attempt had been made to pick up Wyo, I grew itchier. Was I clear? Or were they waiting to nab me, quietly? Had to know. So I called Mike, and told him to have a tummy ache. He did so. I was called in. No trouble. Aside from showing passport at station, then to a new guard at complex, all was usual. I chatted with Mike, picked up 1,000 jokes, with understanding that we would report 100 at a time every 3 or 4 days, no faster. Told him to get well, and went back to L City, stopping on way out to bill chief engineer for working time, travel and tool time, materials, special service, anything I could load in. Thereafter, saw Mike about once a month. Was safe. Never went there except when they called me for malfunction beyond the ability of their staff. And I was always able to repair it. Sometimes quickly. Sometimes after a full day and many tests.
was careful to leave tool marks on cover plates, and had before and after printouts of tests run to show what had been wrong, how I analyzed it, what I had done. Mike always worked perfectly after one of my visits. I was indispensable. So, after I prepared his new voter vocoder add-on, didn't hesitate to tell him to get ill. Call came in 30 minutes. Mike had thought up a dandy. His illness was wild oscillations in conditioning Warden's residence. He was running its heat up, then down, on an 11-minute cycle, while oscillating its air pressure on a short cycle, CA 2 cycles per second, enough to make a man dreadfully nervy, and perhaps cause earache. Conditioning a single residence should not go through a master computer. In Davis tunnels, we handle home and farm with idiot controls. Feedbacks for each cubic, with alarms so that somebody could climb out of bed and control by hand until trouble could be found. If cows got chilly, did not hurt corn. If lights failed over wheat, vegetables were okay. That Mike could raise hell with Warden's residence and nobody could figure out what to do shows silliness of piling everything into one computer. Mike was happy, joyed. This was humor he really scanned. I enjoyed it too. Told him to go ahead, have fun, spread out tools. Got out little black box. A computer man of the watch comes banging and ringing at door. I took my time answering and carried number 5 arm in right hand with short wing bare. This makes some people sick and upsets almost everybody. What in hell do you want, chum? I inquired. Listen, he says. Warden is raising hell. Haven't you found trouble? My compliments to Warden and tell him I will override by hand to restore his precious comfort as soon as I locate faulty circuit. If not slowed up by silly questions. Are you going to stand with door open blowing dust into machines while I have cover plates off? If you do, since you are in charge, when dust puts machines on sputter, you can repair it. I won't leave a warm bed to help. You can tell that to your bloody Warden, too. What's your language, cobber? What's yours, convict? Are you going to close that door, or shall I walk out and go back to El City? And raise number 5 like a club. He closed door. Had no interest in insulting poor sod. Was one small bit of policy to make everybody as unhappy as possible. He was finding working for Warden difficult. I wanted to make it unbearable. Shall I step it up? Mike inquired. Hold it so for 10 minutes, then stop abruptly. Then jog it for an hour, say, with air pressure. Erratic but hard. Know what a sonic boom is? Certainly. It is a... Don't define. After you drop major effect, rattle his air ducts every few minutes with nearest to a boom system will produce. Then give him something to remember. Mike, can you make his WC run backwards?
I surely can.
All of them? How many does he have?
6.
Well, program to give them all a push, enough to soak his rugs. But if you can spot one nearest his bedroom, fountain it clear to ceiling. Can?
Program set up.
Good. Now for your present, ducky. There was room in voter audio box to hide it, and I spent 40 minutes with number 3, getting it just so. We trial checked it through voter vocoder. Then I told him to call Wile and check each circuit. For 10 minutes was silence, which I spent putting tool marks on a cover plate, which should have been removed had anything been wrong. Putting tools away, putting number 6 arm on, rolling up 1,000 jokes, waiting in printout. I had found no need to cut off audio of voter. Mike had thought of it before I had, and always chopped off any time door was touched. Since his reflexes were better than mine by a factor of at least 1,000, I forgot it. At last he said,
All 20 circuits are okay. I can switch circuits in the middle of a word, and YO can't detect discontinuity. And I call Prof and said hello, and talk to Mom on your home phone. All 3 at the same time.
We're in business. What excuse you give Mom?
I asked her to have you call me, Adam Celine, that is. Then we chatted. She's a charming conversationalist.
We discussed Greg's sermon of last Tuesday.
Huh? How?
I told her I had listened to it, man, and quoted a poetic part.
Oh, Mike.
It's okay, man. I let her think I sat in back, then slipped out during the closing hymn. She's not nosy. She knows that I don't want to be seen.
Mom is nosiest female in Luna. Guess it's okay. But don't do it again. Do it again. You monitor meetings and lectures and concerts and stuff.
Unless some busybody switches me off by hand. Man, I can't control those spot pickups the way I do a phone.
The simplest switch. Brute muscle rather than solid-state flip-flop.
That's barbaric and unfair.
Mike, almost everything is unfair. What can't be cured...
must be endured. That's a funny once, man.
Sorry. Let's change it. What can't be cured should be tossed out and something better put in. Which will do. What chances last time you calculated?
Approximately 1 in 9, man.
Getting worse?
Man, they'll get worse for months. We haven't reached the crisis.
With the Yankees in cellar, too. Oh, well. Back to other matter. From now on, when you talk to anyone, if he's been to a lecture or whatever, you were there too, and prove it by recalling something.
Noted. Why, man?
Have you read The Scarlet Pimpernel? Maybe in public library.
Yes. Shall I read it back?
No, no. You're our Scarlet Pimpernel, our John Galt, our Swamp Fox, our man of mystery. You go everywhere, know everything, slip in and out of town without passport. You're always there, yet nobody catches sight of you. His lights rippled. He gave a subdued chuckle.
That's funny, man. Funny once, funny twice, maybe funny always.
Funny always. How long ago did you stop Gymkhana at Wharton's?
43 minutes ago, except erratic booms.
Bet his teeth ache. Give him 15 minutes more, then I'll report job completed.
Noted. Wyo sent you a message, man. She said to remind you of Billy's birthday party.
Oh, my word. Stop everything. I'm leaving. Bye. I hurried out. Billy's mother is Anna. Probably her last. And right well she's done by us. 8 kids. 3 still home. I try to be as careful as Mum never to show favoritism. But Billy is quite a boy, and I taught him to read. Possible he looks like me. Stopped at Chief Engineer's office to leave Bill and the man to see him. Was let in and he was in belligerent mood. Wharton had been riding him. Hold it, I told him. My son's birthday, and shan't be late, but must show you something. Took an envelope from Kit, dumped item on desk. Corpse of housefly, which I charred with a hot wire and fetched.
We do not tolerate flies in Davis tunnels, but sometimes one wanders in from city as locks are opened.
This wound up in my workshop just when I needed it.
See that? Guess where I found it.
On that faked evidence, I built a lecture on care of fine machines. Talked about doors opened. Complained about man on watch. Dust can ruin a computer. Insects are unpardonable. Yet our watchstanders wander in and out as if tube station. Today both doors held open, while this idiot yammered. If I find more evidence that cover plates have been removed by hoof-handed chum who attracts flies, well, it's your plan, Chief. Got more than I can handle. Been doing your chores because I like fine machines. Can't stand to see them abused. Goodbye.
Hold on. I want to tell you something.
Sorry, got to go. Take it or leave it. I'm no vermin exterminator. I'm a computer man. Nothing frustrates a man so much as not letting him get in his say. With luck and help from Wharton, Chief Engineer would have ulcers by Christmas. Was late anyhow, and made humble apology to Billy. Alvarez had thought up new wrinkle. Close search on leaving complex.
I endured it with never a nasty word for the Grunes who searched me. Wanted to get home. But those thousand jokes bothered them.
What's this?
One demanded.
Computer paper, I said. Test runs.
His mate joined him. Don't think they could read. They wanted to confiscate, so I demanded they call Chief Engineer. They let me go. I felt not displeased. More and more such, and guards were daily more hated. Decision to make Mike more a person rose from need to have any party member phone him on occasion. My advice about concerts and plays was simply a side effect. Mike's voice over phone had odd quality I had not noticed during time I had visited him only at Complex. When you speak to a man by phone, there is background noise, and you hear him breathe, hear heartbeats, body motion, even though rarely conscious of these. Besides that, even if he speaks under a hush hood, noises get through, enough to fill space, make him a body with surroundings. With Mike was none of these. By then, Mike's voice was human in timbre and quality, recognizable. He was baritone, had North American accent with Aussie overtones. As Michelle, she, had a light soprano with French flavor. Mike's personality grew also. When first I introduced him to Wyo and Prof, he sounded like a pedantic child. In short weeks, he flowered, until I visualized a man about my own age. His voice, when he first woke, was blurred and harsh, hardly understandable. Now it was clear, and choice of words and phrasing was consistent. Colloquial to me. Scholarly to Prof. Gallant to Wyo. Variation one expects of mature adults. But background was dead. Thick silence. So, we filled it. Mike needed only hints. He did not make his breathing noisy. Ordinarily, you would not notice. But he would stick in touches.
Sorry, Manny. You caught me bathing when the phone sounded. And let one hear hurried breathing. Or, I was eating. I had to swallow.
He used such even on me, once he undertook to be a human body. We all put Adam Celine together, talking it over at Raffles. How old he was? What did he look like? Married? Where did he live? What work? What interests? We decided that Adam was about 40, healthy, vigorous, well-educated, interested in all arts and sciences, and very well grounded in history. A match chess player, but little time to play. He was married in communist type, a troika in which he was senior husband, 4 children. Wife and junior husband not in politics, so far as we knew. He was ruggedly handsome, with wavy iron-gray hair, and was mixed race. 2nd generation one side, 3rd on other. Was wealthy by loony standards, with interest in Novelin and Kongville, as well as El City. He kept offices in Luna City. Outer office with 12 people, plus private office staffed by male deputy and female secretary. Why I wanted to know was he bundling with secretary. I told her to switch off, was private. Lyo said indignantly that she was not being snoopy. Weren't we trying to create a rounded character? We decided that offices were in Old Dome, 3rd ramp, south side, heart of financial district. If you know El City, you recall that in Old Dome some offices have windows since they can look out over floors of Dome. I wanted this for sound effects. We drew a floor plan, and had that office existed, it would have been between Etna Luna and Greenberg and Company. I used Pounce Recorder to pick up sounds at spot. Mike added to it by listening at phones there. Thereafter, when you called Adam Celine, background was not dead. If Ursula, his secretary, took call, it was,
Celine Associates, Luna shall be free.
Then she might say,
Will you hold? Gospodine Celine is on another call.
Whereupon you might hear sound of WC, followed by running water, and know that she had told little white lie. Or Adam might answer, Adam Celine here, free Luna. 1 second while I shut off the video. Or Deputy might answer,
This is Albert Grinwalla, Adam Celine's confidential assistant, Free Luna. If it's a party matter, as I assume it is, that was your party name you gave. Please don't hesitate. I handle such things for the chairman.
Last was a trap. As every comrade was instructed to speak only to Adam Celine. No attempt was made to discipline one who took bait. Instead, his cell captain was warned that his comrade must not be trusted with anything vital.
We got echoes.
Free Luna, or Luna Shall Be Free, took hold among youngsters, then among solid citizens. First time I heard it, in a business call, I almost swallowed teeth. Then called Mike and asked if this person was party member. Was not. So I recommended that Mike trace down Party 3 and see if somebody could recruit him.
Most interesting echo was in Zebra file.
Adam Celine appeared in Boss Fink's security file less than a lunar after we created him, with notation that this was a cover name for a leader in a new underground. Alvarez's spies did their job on Adam Celine. Over a course of months, his Zebra file dossier built up. Male, 34 to 45. Offices, south face of Old Dome. Usually there, 0900 to 1800, Greenwich, except Saturday. But calls are relayed at other hours. Home inside urban pressure, as travel time never exceeds 17 minutes. Children in household. Activities include stock brokerage.
Farming interests.
Attends theater, concerts, etc. Probably member Luna City Chess Club and Luna Association Desh. Plays Ricochet, another heavy sports lunch hour. Probably Luna City Athletic Club. Gourmet, but watches weight. Remarkable memory, plus mathematical ability. Executive type, able to reach decisions quickly. Juan Fink was convinced that he had talked to Adam between acts at the revival of Hamlet by civic players. Alvarez noted description, and matched our picture, all but wavy hair. But thing that drove Alvarez crackers was that phone numbers for Adam were reported, and every time they turned out wrong numbers. Not nulls. We had run out, and Mike was using any number not in use, and switching numbers any time new subscribers were assigned ones we had been using. Alvarez tried to trace Celine Associates using a one wrong digit assumption. This we learned because Mike was keeping an ear on Alvarez's office phone and heard order. Mike used knowledge to play a mickish prank. Subordinate who made one change digit calls invariably reached Warden's private residence. So Alvarez was called in and chewed by Warden. Couldn't scold Mike, but did warn him it would alert any smart person to fact that somebody was playing tricks with computer. Mike answered that they were not that smart. Main result of Alvarez's efforts was that each time he got a number for Adam, we located a spy. A new spy, as those we had spotted earlier were never given phone numbers. Instead, they were recruited into a tail-chasing organization, where they could inform on each other. But with Alvarez's help, we spotted each new spy almost at once. I think Alvarez became unhappy over spies he was able to hire. Two disappeared, and our organization, then over 6,000, was never able to find them. Eliminated, I suppose, or died under questioning. Celine Associates was not only phony company we set up. Lu No Hoko was much larger, just as phony. And not at all dummy. It had main offices in Hong Kong, branches in Novi Leningrad and Luna City. Eventually employed hundreds of people, most of whom were not party members, and was our most difficult operation. Mike's master plan listed a weary number of problems which had to be solved. One was finance. Another was how to protect Catapult from space attack. Prof considered robbing banks to solve first. Gave it up reluctantly. But eventually we did rob banks, firms, and authority itself. Mike thought of it. Mike and Prof worked it out. At first was not clear to Mike why we needed money.
He knew as little about pressure that keeps humans scratching as he knew about sex.
Mike handled millions of dollars and could not see any problem. He started by offering to issue an authority check for whatever dollars we wanted. Prof shied in horror. He then explained to Mike Hazard in trying to cash a check for, let us say, 10 million authority script dollars drawn on authority. So, they undertook to do it. But retail. In many names and places all over Luna. Every bank, firm, shop, agency, including authority, for which Mike did accounting, was tapped for party funds. Was a pyramid swindle based on fact, unknown to me but known to Prof, and latent in Mike's immense knowledge, that most money is simply bookkeeping. Example. Multiply by hundreds of many types. My family's son Sergei, 18 and a party member, is asked to start account at Commonwealth Shared Risk. He makes deposits and withdrawals. Small errors are made each time. He is credited with more than he deposits, is debited with less than he withdraws. A few months later, he takes job out of town and transfers account to Tyco under Mutual. Transferred funds are 3 times already inflated account. Most of this he soon draws out in cash and passes to his cell leader. Mike knows amount Sergei should hand over, but since they do not know that Adam Celine and Bank's computer bookkeeper are one and same, they have each been instructed to report transaction to Adam. Keep them honest, though scheme was not. Multiply this theft of about 3,000 Hong Kong dollars by hundreds somewhat like it. I can't describe jiggery-pokery Mike used to balance his books while keeping thousands of thefts from showing. But bear in mind that an auditor must assume that machines are honest. He will make test runs to check that machines are working correctly, but will not occur to him that tests prove nothing because machine itself is dishonest. Mike's thefts were never large enough to disturb economy. Like a half-liter of blood. Amount was too small to hurt donor. I can't make up mind who lost. Money was swapped around so many ways. But scheme troubled me. I was brought up to be honest, except with authority. Prof claimed that what was taking place was a mild inflation, offset by fact that we plowed money back in. But I should remember that Mike had records, and all could be restored after revolution. With ease, since we would no longer be bled in much larger amounts by authority. Told conscience to go to sleep. Was pipsqueak compared to swindles by every government throughout history in financing every war. And is not revolution a war? This money, after passing through many hands, augmented by Mike each time, wound up as senior financing of Lu Noho Company. Was a mixed company, mutual and stock. Gentlemen and venturer, guarantors, who backed stock, put up that stolen money in own names. Won't discuss bookkeeping, this firm used. Since Mike ran everything, was not corrupted by any tinge of honesty. Nevertheless, its shares were traded in Hong Kong Luna Exchange and listed in Zurich, London, and New York. Wall Street Journal called it an attractive high-risk, high-gain investment with novel growth potential. Luna Hoko was an engineering and exploitation firm, engaged in many ventures, mostly legitimate. But prime purpose was to build a second catapult. Secretly. Operation could not be secret. You can't buy or build a hydrogen fusion power plant for such and not have noticed. Sun Power was rejected for obvious reasons. Parts were ordered from Pittsburgh, standard UNIF Calif equipment, and we happily paid their royalties to get top quality. Can't buy a stator for a kilometers-long induction field without having it noticed, either. But most important, you cannot do major construction hiring many people and not have it show. Sure, catapults are mostly vacuum. Stator rings aren't even close together at ejection end. But authorities' 3G catapult was almost 100 kilometers long. It was not only an astrogation landmark on every Luna jump chart, but was so big it could be photographed or seen by eye from Terra with not large telescope. It showed up beautifully on a radar screen. We were building a shorter catapult, a 10G job, but even that was 30 kilometers long, too big to hide. So, we hid it by purloined letter method. I used to question Mike's endless reading of fiction, wondering what notions he was getting. But turned out he got a better feeling for human life from stories than he had been able to garner from facts. Fiction gave him a gestalt of life, one taken for granted by a human. He lives it. Besides this humanizing effect, Mike's substitute for experience, he got ideas from not true data, as he called fiction. How to hide a catapult, he got from Edgar Allan Poe. We hid it in literal sense, too. This catapult had to be underground, so that it would not show to eye or radar, but had to be hidden in more subtle sense. Selenographic location had to be secret.
How can this be with a monster that big, worked on by so many people?
Put it this way. Suppose you live in Novalin. Know where Luna City is? Why, on east edge of Mare Crisium. Everybody knows that. So? What latitude and longitude? Huh? Look it up in a reference book. So? If you don't know where any better than that, how did you find it last week? No ha-ha cover. I took tube, changed to Torricelli, slept the rest of way, finding it was capsule's worry. See? You don't know where Luna City is. You simply get out when capsule pulls in at tube station south. That's how we hit catapult. It's in Mare Undarum area. Everybody knows that.
But where it is, and where we said it was, differ by amount greater or less than 100 kilometers in direction north, south, east, or west, or some combination.
Today you can look up its location and reference books, and find same wrong answer. Location of that catapult is still most closely guarded secret in Luna. Can't be seen from space, by eye or radar. Is underground, save for ejection, and that is a big black shapeless hole like 10,000 others, and high up in uninviting mountain with no place for a jump rocket to put down. Nevertheless, many people were there, during and after construction. Even Warden visited, and my co-husband Greg showed them around. Warden went by mail rocket, commandeered for day, and his cyborg was given coordinates and a radar beacon to home on, a spot, in fact, not far from sight. But from there was necessary to travel by Rulligan, and our lorries were not like passenger buses from Ennsville to Beluthahatchee in old days. They were cargo carriers, no ports for sightseeing, and a ride so rough that human cargo had to be strapped down. Warden wanted to ride up in cab, but, sorry, господин, just space for Wrangler and his helper, and took both to keep her steady. 3 hours later, he did not care about anything but getting home. He stayed 1 hour and was not interested in talk about purpose of all this dwelling and value of resources uncovered. Less important people, workmen and others, traveled by interconnecting ice exploration bores, still easier way to get lost. If anybody carried an inertial pathfinder in his luggage, he could have located site. But security was tight. One did so and had accident with P-suit. His effects were returned to L-City, and his pathfinder read what it should, i.e., what we wanted it to read, for I made hurried trip out with number 3 arm along. You can reseal one without a trace if you do it in nitrogen atmosphere. I wore an oxygen mask at slight overpressure. No ha-ha. We entertained VIPs from Earth, some high in authority. They traveled easier underground route. I suppose Warden had warned them. But even on that route is one 30-kilometer stretch by Rulligan. We had one visitor from Earth who looked like trouble. Dr. Dorian, physicist and engineer. Laurie tipped over. Silly driver tried shortcut. They were not in line of sight for anything, and their beacon was smashed. Poor Dr. Dorian spent 72 hours in an unsealed pumice igloo and had to be returned to L-City, ill from hypoxia, an overdose of radiation, despite efforts on his behalf by 2 party members driving him. Might have been safe to let him see. He might not have spotted double talk and would not have spotted error in location. Few people look at stars when pea-suited, even when sun doesn't make it futile. But still fewer can read stars. And nobody can locate himself on surface without help unless he has instruments, knows how to use them, and has tables and something to give